Okay, so let's get started. Hi everybody, thanks for coming back. I felt like last time I was like really off my game a little bit. Like Rabbi Greijauer asked, how'd it go? I'm like, all right. He's like, that's not a ringing endorsement. I'm like, I just didn't feel like I was. Whenever I give a terrible shiur, it's always the top featured shiur on why you're terrible. They never consult me, like, say, like, was this any good? You know, if it was an exciting title lesson. Anyway, so today we're continuing. What we said last time is that the overall topic is how to prepare a halacha shiur. So last time we gave a basic introduction and we spoke about learning the sugya. Today we're going to talk about. I pointed out that I thought we divided into three sections. So first is learning the sugya, then preparing the shiur, and then delivering the shiur. So today we'll talk about preparing the shiur, and it's an interesting thing to talk about because it's something that I do all day every day is preparing halacha shiurim pretty much. But like I never really thought about. The process, you know, you just sort of do it. It's like Rabbi Penner once said that Rabbi Berkowitz said to him that a baseball player probably can't describe how he hits a baseball. Meaning, he sees, he swings, he hits. You know, he probably can't describe the mechanics of his swing and things like that. Those are the coaches. You know, the coaches could describe that. But the guy who actually does it, it's hard to describe. So it was a healthy exercise for me personally to go through, to think about, like, the process of preparing a shiur. But I thought I would just print out a random... I just went into my Google Drive and printed out the first... I just clicked on random things. And this is just a random collection of different shiurim that I've prepared that I think hopefully with that, and please feel free to take a peek, hopefully with that, and I don't know if these are any good either, meaning I didn't, it's mamish random. Sometimes I have a lot of time to prepare, sometimes I don't have as much time to prepare, but hopefully from looking at this, maybe you'll be able to see some of the things we're going to talk about. I want to basically highlight six things about preparing a shiur. So it's always good to work with numbers, so you know exactly what's coming. Six things about preparing a shiur. And they are, and we'll get into detail, but they are, just to list them first, amassing the information, organizing the information, trimming the information, formulating, planning stories and jokes, and talking and learning with others. So let's go through one by one. So first, just amassing the information. We already discussed last time about learning the sugya. Learning the sugya is what you do in morning seder. It's what you do when you learn with chavrusa. It's what you do when you're sitting with a gemara in front of you. By amassing the information, I mean something else. I mean, you take a step back and you decide, okay, now that I learned the sugya, which topics, which questions do I want to address? Meaning, I just learned the sugya of yichud. You know how much there is in the sugya of yichud to discuss? I can't give like a 1-hour shiur on all of Hilchos Yichud unless I'm Rav Shechter, right? Meaning he does that. Like he takes like an entire topic of halacha and in 1 hour you get more from him than you would get in like a full semester of class, you know, somewhere else on the same topic. But no one is, there's exactly one Rav Shechter in the world. So I can't do that. I mean, if I'm going to give a shiur, I can't discuss Baila Be'ir and Pesach Pesuach and how many people is in this Yichud and who's a paritz nowadays and whether two rooms in a house are a yichud problem or not a yichud problem if you're in two separate rooms. I can't talk about all of that thoroughly and clearly, so I have to think about what are the shailas and what are the topics, meaning which of the topics that come up in the sugya am I going to focus on, am I going to put my energy into, and then you want to think about the most practical or interesting cases so that you have a way to properly introduce it and to engage whoever is going to be listening. Sometimes it's very straightforward and it's like within a single category, meaning that there's a, take Yichud as an example, that I want to talk about Pesach Pesuach, and it's just very practical to know if I'm at home alone with my housekeeper, does closing the door without locking it count as Pesach Pesuach L'Rosh Hashanah Rabim? Is a closed unlocked door good enough? Or, what would qualify as a Pesach Pesuach L'Rosh Hashanah Rabim? But sometimes it's much more dynamic, meaning sometimes when you think of actual shailas, the shailas have many, many, many more topics that are covered within a particular shaila, and any kula that you can have is going to rely on many snifim, like yichud with a video camera. That could touch upon all sorts of things, some within Hilchas Yichud, some within Hilchas video camera, you know, Eide Yediyah and Eide Re'iyah, you know, there could be so many different topics within that, but it's helpful to think about what's going to come up when I'm talking about this halachic topic, because sometimes I could study the entire sugya, and the Yichud is a good example, because it's a really self-contained sugya. Yeah, you have a little passage in Masech Savad Zar, Masech Sanhedrin, but really, you have it self-contained at the end of Masech Kiddushin. It's a really self-contained sugya, and you can learn all of Hilchus Yichud, but you're not going to be able to necessarily answer a question about Yichud with the video camera, but someone's definitely going to ask that if you give a shiur, right? What if you have security cameras? What if you're on a Zoom? What if you have, right? Someone's definitely going to ask that question, so it makes a lot of sense to take a step back and just think about that. Like, what would a normal person ask? You know, what would be the questions that come up be? And that's part of amassing the information, because it's not only learning a sugya. Learning a sugya is going to keep you within that one sugya in the end of Kiddushin. But when you think about the questions that could be asked, then you know how much more information you need to amass. And in that stage, in stage one of amassing the information, this is where cheat svarim are very, very helpful. Meaning, I don't think we should be shy about using these kitzur svarim and, you know, those svarim that compile all of the tshuvas and all of the topics and all of the maramakomos. You know, it doesn't replace learning a sugya. That's what we spoke about last time. You really need to learn the sugya, but to just be aware of everything that could come up. It's very helpful to look at things like that. I've mentioned recently, I don't remember if it was to you guys, that Rav Asher Weiss told us that he uses those svarim sometimes. He said that there's some guy in the Mir Yeshiva who's been studying Hilchos Yichud for 7 years. He probably will know Hilchos Yichud, you know, more Marmakomos in Hilchos Yichud than even Hagaon Rav Asher Weiss is going to know. So if he wrote a sefer on it, Rav Asher Weiss wants to see that sefer. Now, as I've pointed out in the past, probably Rav Asher would say that you wouldn't go to him to that guy for a psak halacha in Hilchos Yichud necessarily over Rav Asher Weiss, because that guy probably sees the entire world as one big Hilchos Yichud, because that's all he's ever seen in the last 7 years when he was putting together his encyclopedia on. I'm just using Yichud because that's the topic I started with, but whatever. I don't have any sefer in mind, but whatever that topic is, whereas a more well-rounded Talmud Chacham has more of a sense of balance of where everything fits in, but these svarim are very, very helpful in terms of finding the maramakomos that you may have missed along the way. So that's step one, is just amassing the information, and use whatever tools you have at your disposal to amass the information. And again, amassing the information is not the same as learning the sugya. Learning the sugya is learning a sugya, is really going through a limud properly. Amassing information is filling in the gaps after you learn the sugya. Then there is organizing the information. So now you have like a document with 25 pages of maramakomos that you've put together as you start collating, you start copying and pasting, and now you have to organize it all. So organizing is, to me, it's the most important step, especially in halacha. Halacha involves linear thinking. You know, it's possible that you'd be saying good lamdus even if you're not 100% organized, because it's sharp and it's mistaver and whatever, and you know, and you're making strong arguments even if you're not super organized. But I don't think it's possible to present halacha effectively if you're not organized. It's just the nature of halacha that it involves linear thinking. You know, they say that there are like two types of people, personalities. There are word, they describe it like computer programs, as word, which is like free flowing, doesn't have to fit into any boxes. Your document could be as long as you want. And then there are like Excel people, like everything's got to fit into a box. So like two like mindsets. You know, I'm very much an Excel person. Everything has to, you know, fit into a box and belong where it belongs. I can't actually work Excel on a computer, but I'm saying like the way my brain works is similar to the way Excel works. Whereas some people are just like, they're more free flowing and they need the freedom to just say and go. Like someone, one of my dear chaverim, who's very, very much a word person, was giving a shiur recently, and he was going like way over time, and he said, for those who are living in the olam of Zman, you can leave. Like, I don't even know what that means, but I feel like I'm in the Olam of Zman, you know, like I feel like I need to be in like a certain to know when does this start, when does this end, where does this belong, and that's the type of thinking that works with halacha. So organization is very, very critical with halacha, and I would say, and maybe this is just me, to actually draw an outline, to actually make an outline of any halachic topic you're going to present, you should be able, not just be able, but you should actually do it, to draw an outline. And notice, so I passed around all these different Mar Makomos packets from a variety of different shiurim, every single one of them, because you go on my Google Drive, every single one of them has an outline. So you can take you can eyeball the shiur, and you can see, even this presentation I'm giving you right now is in an outline form. Right? You can eyeball, I could tell you, oh, we're going to talk about six topics. How do I know that? Because in Roman numeral number 2, I have A, B, C, D, E, and F, right? So you can see exactly where you're going and exactly what you plan on doing. And that helps you, keep things in the right place. So I would very, very strongly recommend drawing an outline. And then you go back to your notes and you stick the relevant parts into the outline. Meaning there may be like a long tshuva from Rav Vadi Yosef that discusses 12 different elements of the topic at hand, but not all those 12 elements belong in the same spot in the outline. I mean, Rav Vadi Yosef has a tshuva where he talks about Pesach, Solishasam, and Baila Be'ir, and he talks about all of the topics we mentioned before, but in your outline, those are different items, so you take this part of the tshuva and put it there, take this part of the tshuva and put it there, meaning to not just say, oh, it's one source, so it all belongs in one place. You have to know how to break it down. Once you have an outline, that instructs you, and that tells you where to put things, so that I find to be very helpful. As you're going through the tshuva, as you're going through long Gemara Makomos, a long Ran in the back of the Gemara, just start labeling on the side of your Gemara, Kushyas Haran, Teretz Aleph, and with a quick summary, so that you could just look in the margins afterwards and see, oh, this is this is where that topic is, and this is where that topic is. You know, some of the newer Sfarim, they do that for you. They put like on the side of the Minchas Chinuch, right? They have like three word summary of like what that's about. But like you shouldn't have to have Machon Yerushalayim shouldn't have to do that for you, right? That's what learning is. That's what you're supposed to do. So then when you go back to it, you should be able to stick it into the outline appropriately. So that is stage two. And please feel free to stop me at any point and raise any questions or ha'aros or anything that I might be missing in terms of how I'm saying this. So again, so stage one is to amass the information. Stage two is to organize the information. Stage three, and this is something I got from Dibuk Chaverim, from Pilpul Chaverim. I was on a trip last week with a bunch of my Chaverim, and I said, no, I have to speak about how to prepare a halacha shir. So both Rabbi Shai Shechter and Rabbi Isaac Reis immediately said, you have to teach, and Rabbi Larry Rothwax all said, like a pe'echad, you have to teach guys how to cut down the information. Meaning, a lot of times people feel like, if I can sound like I'm quoting a lot, then I'll sound really smart, and that will be an effective way of teaching. First of all, you're probably not going to sound really smart by doing that, and second of all, even if you do sound really smart, that doesn't necessarily mean effective teaching, right? The smartest, very often the most brilliant people are not really great teachers. Their minds work mile a minute, and they don't know, they're just saying a lot of stuff, and they're not really checking for understanding, and people aren't really hopping everything. It's very important to trim what you want to say. You may have spent hours and hours and hours preparing this year, so you know of so many Mar Makomos, so you feel like it's baltashkes to waste some of these Mar Makomos that I'm not gonna share with other people. But very often less is more. You should not sound like the Abia Omer when you say your shir. The Abia Omer is the Abia. Rav Vadi Yosef is Rav Vadi Yosef when he writes a tshuva and he wants to shake out every Mar Makom. Good, that's his derech in writing tshuvas, and that's great. But when you're actually teaching somebody else, that is not an effective way of teaching. Now, it's not to say a person should never, when giving a shir, should never say v'chein kasa, and the 10 posts can say like this. Sometimes it helps to say like that, to just list. For example, I just gave a shir in my shul, my shalosh shudas, about a shaila that came up. That's what I do at Shalosh Shudas. I always do about like a rabbi's desk kind of thing. And what was the shaila? The shaila was that maybe I'll give share on this sometime. But the shaila was that that my brother told me that he has an Israeli couple in his community that have been married for a long time. They were not frum when they got married, and they've become balei tshuva over the years. And my brother's a mohel. My brother did the bris of their first son. Now they had a second son. He's going to do the bris. And in the course of, and they're shomer Shabbos. They come to shul every Shabbos. Shomer kashrus, everything. And in the course of conversation with them, it was evident that they never had chuppah v'kiddushin. They just got married secularly. They never had chuppah v'kiddushin. So my brother so he's going to do a chuppah v'kiddushin for them, obviously. But he was mesupik whether he should say a bracha. Do you say a birch seirusin? So what does that hinge on? So it hinges on a few things. It happens to be a fascinating shayla. Not a shir for now, but it's a great shir. It's a great topic in terms of the nature of birch seirusin, birch nisum, birch shavuot, birch mitzvah. How long afterwards can you say it? But what it also hinges on is how do we view heinene di yuchad, heinene di biya, in other masu bilas, bilas nos? Are they married already? Meaning maybe by virtue of the fact that they've been living together and they've been having biya together, how do I know they've been having biya together? You don't even need heinene di yuchad, heinene di biya. They have two children to show for it, right? So you know that there's a chazak in other mosav bilas bilas no sets the sheet of the Beis Hillel, right? Meseches Gittin, Megarshes Shavlonim Abpundki. So do you say a bracha if they might already be married because of by virtue of the fact that they've been living together? So you have to talk about the famous machlokas Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin about civil marriages, right? You know, Rav Moshe was matir thousands of mamzerim like that by saying that civil marriages are not a marriage bichlal, and therefore all these women that divorced their husband, that got divorced but never received a get and then got remarried and had children, were never really married in the first place, and therefore it's not an ishtish and the children are not mamzerim. Rav Henkin held civil marriage is a marriage and the children are mamzerim and these women are ishtish, so you need to talk about that. But in that context, I found it helpful to say that Rav Henkin holds one way, Rav Moshe holds another way, but you know who else holds like Rav Moshe? This one and that one and that one and that one and that one, you know, and start listing them off, because you have to give the impression, which is true, meaning you want to make the point that it's, we call it a machlokas Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe, but that makes it sound very even. It wasn't really very even. Rav Henkin had a big chiddush and everybody else held differently. This is Sri Deish, that's a little bit like Rav Henkin, but pretty much everybody else is on Rav Moshe's side. So in that context, it may be helpful but there has to be a reason to do it. Meaning, you never want to just give lists because you want to show that you know a big list of poskim that say something. There's got to be a goal. There's got to be a reason to do it. Otherwise, you cut it down a little bit. I've been to shiurim where people read a whole long passage, let's say in Rashba, and then they'll read a whole long passage in the Ritva that says exactly the same thing the Rashba says, kimat, word for word, and whatever words are different, they're not even being medayakin. They're just saying, yeah, and the Ritva says that way also. Well, why'd you spend 10 minutes going through the same exact thing? This isn't like an Iyun Shir in the morning. This is, you're giving a Shir to Balabatim, you're giving a Shir to NCS Wires, they don't need to go through every, if you're just going to be repetitive, the whole thing. So, right, you read a whole long tshuva of Moshe, and read a whole long tshuva of, of Menashe Klein, and it turns out they say the exact same thing. So don't read the whole tshuva. You got to trim down a little bit. It's unlikely that Rav Moshe or Menashe Klein say the same thing, but that's a different story. It's very likely that Rashba and the Ritva say the same thing. So people sometimes will read like duplicate sources by repeating things, and it's just unnecessary. Also think about like the how important the source is, not just in terms of who they are, but also what they add to the sugya. Meaning, a source could be important for two reasons. One reason it could be important is you're giving a halacha shir, and Rav Moshe Feinstein has something to say about it. So it could be that Rav Moshe didn't add too much of a chiddush, but he's Rav Moshe Feinstein. If Rav Moshe has a tshuva on the topic, and you're giving a shir on that topic, and you don't mention that, that's a glaring omission. It's like if the Shulchan Aruch paskins something, and you leave out the Shulchan Aruch. That's a glaring omission. If you leave out, let's say Rav Menashe Klein, just to use him, he was a great, great Talmud Chacham and all the rest. It's not a glaring omission if you leave out Rav Menashe Klein. I remember I once wrote an article many years ago about brushing teeth on Shabbos. In the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, and I got a letter, and I thought I did a decent job of organizing, didn't trim very much because it was written form, so I put a lot in the footnotes, you know, it was like a lot of footnotes and a lot of marmon columns, and I got the journal got a letter they sent to me that someone said, how do you write an article in Russian Teeth and Shabbos and you leave out the tshuva of Rav Regensburg? And I was like, oh. So I asked Rav Shachter, like, who's Regensburg? So he said, I think he was a rabbi in Chicago. So it turns out the guy who wrote the letter was Rav Regensburg's grandson. Okay, so I understand that that he's bothered that I left out Rav Regensburg's tshuva. But, you know, it's not a glaring omission if you leave out the tshuva of Rav Regensburg on brushing through. Rav Shach said, I actually know that tshuva. He said, when Rav Regensburg wrote his sefer, he sent it to my father. My father had no time to read this stuff. So he said, here, Herschel, read the sefer. Tell me if there's anything worthwhile. And so he said, I read the sefer. And I told him that he has a tshuva on brushing teeth on Shabbos, where he says the exact same thing Rav Soloveitchik said. So, like, okay. So if it doesn't add much, and Rav Soloveitchik already said it all, like, what do you need to, you know, so to keep in mind who the person is, and then to keep in mind whether the person is adding something to the discussion, meaning it could be that someone has a chap that needs to be dealt with. You know, you could leave out a tshuva from Sternbach, from a halacha shir, but you might want to include it if he has a knech, a chap, a lamdus, or something that makes it more interesting. So those are the two criteria that you want to judge by who the person is and by what the content of what they're quoting, whether it adds something to the sugya. So that's as far as trimming is concerned. Good? So far, so good? Okay, then we move on to formulations. Formulations means you have all the information. It's all organized already. You've already trimmed out whatever you don't want to say. Now you have to think about, how am I going to say it? Meaning, which of these sources need to be read inside? Which of these sources should not be read inside? If it's a 12-page tshuva from Rav Avadia, probably should not read the whole tshuva inside. You may want to underline four lines and read that inside if it's really important. If it's a pasuk, probably do want to read that inside. So you have to think about what should and should not be read inside. And how do you formulate and summarize the concepts therein? Meaning, a lot of times people will try to express themselves and they understand it in their heads, but you could tell that they never thought about how they're going to say it to other people. And that's a very important step in the process, to think about, how can I best express this to others in a way that they'll understand it simply. You know, there's a certain brilliance in breaking down something to a kiyum and a maisa. You know, a maisa and a kiyum, a maisa and a chalos. You know, to have terminology through which, now, I'm not suggesting that you should stick Brisker terminology into everything, whether it fits or not. Not everything is a gavra and a chefza, right? Meaning, but there is power to terminology, and to think about and even make up your own terminology, that's okay too. You know, I remember Rav Yonason Sacks gave a shiur about mitzvah-oriented mitzvos and result-oriented mitzvos. You know, you take lulav. Why did I take a lulav? Because that's it. The maisa is to take a lulav. That's what you're supposed to do. You build a makkah. Why do I build a makkah? Oh no, there's a result that I'm trying to achieve with that. That's to create a safe home so that no one falls off. There are mitzvos that are focused on the maisa and the result. But to be able to formulate it that way, to be able to say it in a line where, like, oh, that becomes clear. Now I see. Now I can look at every mitzvah and be able to identify whether it fits into this category or that category. Rav Parnas Shlita, used to be Rosh Yeshiva here, was one of the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Lander College, was famous for this, that he would make up his own terminology that no one else ever heard before in describing the sugya. And the Talmidim loved it because it really clarified things for them. Like, he was trying to say, you know, very dakistika things and very tif, you know, very kinds of nuanced kinds of ideas, and it's very difficult to get that convey that without thinking of proper terminology that will convey it. So think of formulations not only in terms of clarity but also in terms of cleverness. What will stick in someone's mind if it's a one liner, if it's a catchphrase. I mentioned last time we spoke that we had a meeting with Rav Yisachar Friend, and he said a major part of what he has to do before the Siyum HaShas is think of a catchphrase, because people need to leave with a catchphrase, meaning that's going to stick in people's minds. So when he said, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, he said, I know that it was Voltaire, but, you know, like, I have to say it. I have to give a catchphrase for people to walk away with. Then stage five is, you know, there. It's very important that halacha, that shiurim not be dry, particularly halacha shiurim, because halacha has a tendency to be dry. Meaning, lamdus by its nature is dynamic and exciting and rich, and intellectually stimulating. halacha, if taught by someone who doesn't, who's maybe not as experienced in teaching halacha or doesn't know how to present it properly, can very often come off as dry. And there are many ways to combat that. First way, most important way, is to actually learn it properly, is to not divorce halacha from lamdas. I strongly recommend in the beginning of the fifth volume of Contemporary Halacha, fourth or fifth volume, I think the fifth volume of Contemporary Halachic Problems, Rabbi Bleich has an essay on lamdas and halacha, and the interplay between lamdas and halacha. It is fantastic. It is just a beautiful presentation of why it's so important to be a lamdan if you're going to be a posek, and how the two relate to each other. And if you're going to say halacha shir, it shouldn't be absent of lamdas. Let there be a chakira, let there be some nafkaminas. It doesn't have to be complicated lamdas. Let it be, especially if you're dealing with the NCS wires with high school kids, you're going to talk about the bracha of hamapil. So talk about, well, is it a birch hashevach or is it a birch sanenin? And my nafkamina, whether it's a birch hashevach or birch sanenin. And, you know, it's a simple chakira. You can come up with five or six nafkaminas. It's very, you know, it's great that way. You want to talk about, you know, shayim mikravech targum. So is it a din in Talmud Torah? Is it a din in achana for kriyas haTorah? L'may nafkamina. Okay, you can come up with 10, 11 nafkamina. I have in my safe, I think, 11 nafkaminas, you know, and like that chakir. So you can come up with like simple lamdas, and that makes it exciting. But sometimes you also need to make things exciting for people who the Torah itself is not going to do it, and you're going to need to incorporate stories, and you're going to need to incorporate jokes, and don't just rely on, yeah, I'll think of something funny to say. Sometimes you will, but sometimes it'll also fall flat. You know, the greatest comedians in the world practice their act in like all these small clubs, and they refine it and refine it and refine it, and they do it 1,000 times, and then they get a Netflix special, and they and by then they have it fully refined, and it sounds like so like it's just coming off their tongue, like it's just like they just thought of it on the spot. They didn't think of anything on the spot. Everything was exactly planned out. Every word, every nuance, every gesture, everything was planned out, and it helps when you could do that. Just this past Shabbos, there was a maybe I shouldn't say the joke, but I made a joke in shul that someone said, that was so sharp. I'm like, sharp? It wasn't sharp at all. I was thinking about it for like an hour beforehand, but I just, you know, I just pretended like I thought of it on the spot, because that's part of, you know, that's part of what you do. So a lot of times people say, well, I don't have any stories. Of course you have stories, meaning it doesn't have to be an exciting story. Any story is good in the sense that, I shouldn't say that. Stories are there for the following reason. You're quoting Mara Makomos. Notice how Rav Shakta does this all the time. You're quoting Mara Makomos. So you could just say, this Sefer says this, that Sefer says that. Or, if you realize that that's a little too dry, you could say, oh, who's the author of this Sefer? Oh, he was a Galatzianer. He was a, I don't know if you haven't heard of Shachter. He was a, you know, and you tell a little story about him. How do you find stories about him? Google it, or just read the Hakdama to the Sefer. Oh, he wrote this Sefer because, you know, the reason the Marcheshes wrote his Sefer is because he didn't like how Reb Chaim was taking the world by storm. It was changing the old Derech HaLimud. So he wrote a Sefer that, you know, tried to go back to the old Derech HaLimud or whatever. You know, so the stories are there for the taking. Anytime you quote a Sefer, that Sefer is a person, and that person is many, many stories. So use that, you know, and it's also educational. It will actually open up the Talmidim or the NCS Wires, whoever it is that you're talking to, or the Balabatim, whoever you may be talking to this fascinating information. And then finally, I think this step is a critical step. They're all critical steps, but to talk and learning with others. Meaning, if you've prepared a chabura, so talk it over with someone. Meaning, see if you could explain it to somebody else. See if you could say, okay, here's, you know, I'm going to give an hour-long chabura, but here's the 5-minute summary of it, and see if you're able to express it in a way that makes sense to other people. And I remember I once gave a shiur about psak halacha, and someone asked, and I went through the stages of psak, and someone said, well, why didn't you mention talking to other people? Because every time I've ever heard you giving halacha shir, you always say, and I asked my brother, and he mentioned this to me, and my friend told me this, and Rabbi Willig told me that, and Rabbi Shechta told me that. So obviously, every time you have these questions, part of your process is that you talk it over with other people. And I'm like, you're right. I so took it for granted. I didn't even think to label that as part of the process. That should be part of the process, because other people will have what to say. They'll have what to add, and specifically. If your friends don't understand what you're talking about, and their Bnei Torah, who spend Yom V'Layla in the Beis Medrash, probably your NCSYers won't either understand what you're talking about. It probably means that you have a little more refining to do. And also, a friend or a Rebbe will often know a maramakom or an anecdote, you know, that you don't know. I was once with Rav Shechter, and he had that hanhaga that's against what you just said. Oh, that's so interesting. Why would he have a hanhaga that way? You know, this is the way I understood the Shulchan. I mean, it will give you a lot of color to what you're doing, and especially if you're planning on saying a chiddush. If you're planning on saying a chiddush, then especially in halacha, make sure that it's oiskahaltin. You know, you want to make sure you're talking over with Talmid Chachamim to make sure that what you're saying, you know, that you didn't just tell everybody to go be Ovid Avot Zara. You know, you want to make sure that that what you're saying makes sense. So again, to summarize, we spoke about amassing the information, which is different than learning the sugya. It's finding all the relevant sources that will come up in the course of discussing the topic, organizing the information, outlining things. We spoke about trimming the information, not being repetitive and doing redundant sources, and trying to find what are the more important sources in terms of who they are and what they add. We spoke about formulations, thinking of bite-sized pieces or ways to describe things in a single sentence, in a single way. We spoke about planning stories and jokes to pepper the conversation and the shiur. And we spoke about talking and learning with others. And Be'ez Hashem, you go through those steps, you'll then have a shiur that's ready for presentation. And then next time on Thursday, the plan is we will talk about presentation. Okay. Questions, comments, critiques, ha'aros?
Do you recommend, at least for us on Kola, like sourcing our makoros like exactly where they are, or should we just say the way to assess?
I think it's always better to source, because you'd be surprised. You know, there are kids that will like save things. They'll like, you'll give them the paper, they will save them, and they'll come back to them years later. My wife had from seminary, she had an amazing Rebbe, Rabbi Lerner in MMY, and he had these amazing source packets. You know how many temin alach shir would take straight from Rabbi Lerner's source packets? Because, you know, like, it's always good to have something that I have a Talmud that reached out to me 2 weeks ago. He found all the packets from when he was in 11th grade. He's been a Rebbe for 7 years already, I think, you know. And when he was in 11th grade, he found all the packets and he's preparing his shiurim for. It's always good. It's always good to have, you know, to have things clearly where they are. And, you know, I think it's always good. Good. Okay. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.